You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps Radio. This is a show where we talk about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world. And I want to thank you for joining us. Today we're going to be speaking about digital assets, stable coins, and what the NASDAQ is doing with tokenization of equities. I want to first start with stable coins and digital assets. The stable coin market is one of the most, I guess, one of the fastest growing sectors of the digital asset space, where when it first started rolling out with Tether and whatnot, I mean, they were the only show in town. Then you had USDC, they came into the market, and now, you know, I mean, you have JP Morgan with their Onyx blockchain. They've been in the space building on a private level a massive system, a blockchain system for moving money, moving stable, you know, assets all over the place. And I think they hit about $1 trillion in transactions. Now, the stablecoin market, and this is just the reported market cap that, you know, and again, this is as of this year, earlier this year. What it is now, I can't say, but I'm going to show you something. You have, you know, CoinLore. Their stats are at 310 billion. Okay, you have AMB Crypto. You know, you're at about 300 billion as of last year. You have different ranges that really pop up, but that's not the most interesting part, because those numbers will increase. The thing is that it's the utilization of it. It's not so much what you have out there, it's how it's being utilized. Okay, now this is where it gets interesting. Stablecoin activity has exploded. In 2024, it was about 5, maybe 6 trillion in activity. As of now, it is well over $33 trillion in stablecoin transaction volume. Think about it. You know, $33 trillion in transaction value. Okay, Payram, they're reporting that stable coins, they're powering probably about $46 trillion, or will be doing it this year. $46 trillion, annualized payment economy. It's amazing. It's amazing. And it makes all the sense in the world. It makes all the sense in the world, because if you're moving money and it's cheap to do it, and you have, if you're converging with TradFi and DeFi, and you're able to do it with stable coins, why not? And this is what, you know, you're gonna have everything from Western Union to MasterCard. They just took over a stable coin creator of sorts. So you're gonna have all these things going on. You know, I believe Coinbase did something. Kraken's doing something, this one's doing something, that one's doing something. You have HSBC, they're putting together a consortium for this. It's not going to stop. This is just the beginning. This is just, you know, we're in probably round two of the fight. A lot more rounds to go. Okay, now what they're predicting, that the market, not the transactions, but the market for stablecoins could reach $2 trillion this year. This year, okay, and that's huge, and what is happening there? It's opening up opportunity. You have creators, you have, you know, infrastructure that's being put in place that is allowing all this stuff to happen. Of course, you have banks like, you know, like JP Morgan with the Onyx and HSBC and other banks that are doing centralized things, you know, private blockchains on a centralized level. And I understand why they're doing it. They're trying to create their own situation there. But look, blockchain itself, the whole vision for blockchain is decentralization. You can have things centralized with you know, within your ecosystem, but there has to be some sort of on ramp or off ramp to speak to everything else out there. And this is going to take, I guess, a little bit of time, but you know, when you have, you know, whether it be wallets, whether it be this and other payment portals, they're going to be doing some stuff. Look, MasterCard, I think that they had the right idea by making that stablecoin group acquisition. I think that was BVBK, but they're doing that, and they've spent, you know, a lot of money doing that. All right, so that is going to allow them to actually penetrate this market. All right, but what I want to do, and again, the digital asset space itself is going, in my opinion, is going to boom this year. There's going to be a lot of activity. But what I want to do is play an audio clip of Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong talking about some of this stuff, so that you can get a better feel for what's happening in the space and hearing it from someone else but myself, okay, beyond myself. So let's play that clip.
2025 was a massive year for crypto. We started to get regulatory clarity finally in the US. So we got the Genius Act passed. In the wake of that, we saw 200 companies announce stablecoin integrations. Financial institutions are adopting this at an insane rate. We now power crypto infrastructure for 5 of the top 20 largest banks in the world. It's not just a US phenomenon. We're seeing incredible adoption of crypto in emerging markets where people have high inflation, and stablecoins are on a tear, not to mention prediction markets, et cetera, et cetera. So I do think that we're at a breakout moment for crypto, and yeah, it's a big opportunity.
Yeah, and as I said, again, this market, the digital asset space, stablecoin space, you hear from different players in the space with what's going to happen. I think it's just going to be a booming situation. And then what is also interesting, and I'm going to roll into this, is that what the NASDAQ has been trying to do. Okay, what they wound up doing, and then they've been hard at work doing this. They've been looking to tokenize equities, put it on chain, but do it in a way that it works within the framework of what they have going on, because you have a lot of nuances and legal things that happen there. You have to adhere to, you know, the national market system. You have to adhere to certain things. So they've been working hard putting this together. And Matt Tavarese, he's the head of this whole initiative. I'm going to play an audio clip of him in a little bit. But he talks about this. I just want to go over some things in regards to the NASDAQ doing this, because they just got the nod this week to allow them to do that. And what it's going to do, and this is my view on it, is that this goes beyond the NASDAQ itself, because when they have the pilot program going on, which I believe is going to be extremely successful, it's going to move quicker than people think. You know, they were talking about 2027. I think that they're going to go through this whole process within a couple of months, and they're going to be rocking and rolling. Now, here's what my view, again, my opinion, that when they do this, this is going to be a massive threat to the OTC markets. Massive. It's going to eliminate their structural advantages. Okay, you know, the OTC markets historically, what they offer? Lower listing requirements, cheaper compliance, fast access to public trading. You can put something on the pink sheets or the OTC ID, whatever they call it now, you know, with little effort. Okay, but NASDAQ, tokenizing equities, well, they have the ability to offer a few things. Instant settlement, transparent cap tables, automated compliance, lower operational costs, all without lowering listing standards. Okay, now, the OTC markets, their big thing is, you know, cheap and fast. Get on there and get rocking and rolling. Well, I think that they may have some problems. The reality is that, you know, when you're talking about blockchain-based equities, it reduces the need for a transfer agent, period, the end. Okay, in OTC markets, these type of companies, they rely heavily on transfer agents, manual shareholder updates, slow corporate actions. NASDAQ, their blockchain model, it's a fantastic thing, I believe, because this is going to open up the markets, not only for the NASDAQ, but it's going to open up a lot of things for a lot of companies that are in this space, because their blockchain model, it automates shareholder records, automates corporate actions, it eliminates reconciliation delays. This basically removes one of the core infrastructure roles of the OTC markets. It's going to be something. But the transparency is the key thing. You have, you know, the OTC markets, you have three tiers. You have the OTC QX, QB, and you have, as I mentioned, the OTC Pinks or ID, however they call it. You know, the lower tiers, notorious for poor disclosure, opaque ownership, limited reporting. You don't know what's going on there. You know, you buy something, you have no idea if it's going to be there tomorrow, what's going to happen. Okay, you're talking about, you know, we you have, you know, orders that are mapped out. You know, it's not an open market where you can go sell. You have to hope that a market maker says, yeah, I'm going to go buy it, but I'll buy it for 75% less. This is what happens. Blockchain rails, they create real-time ownership and visibility, real-time trading transparency, immutable reporting, and the opacity of the OTC markets become a liability. And if, and I'm telling you, it's, and I'm not going to even say if, I'm going to say when, the NASDAQ, when they create a junior level, another tier that's a lower tier, but it's lower cost, automated compliance, transparent shareholder records, and has that transparency and everything, and they put things in place that can kind of, you know, mirror what the OTCQB does. Well, you have thousands of OTC eligible companies that could migrate to the NASDAQ. And this, I believe, is the single biggest threat to OTC markets in history, okay? And when if that should happen, liquidity is going to migrate away. What follows there, transparency, trust, settlement efficiency. You know, blockchain-based equities offer all of this stuff. OTC markets offer none of them at scale. And investors, well, they naturally prefer real-time settlement, immutable records, transparency, exchange-grade oversight. You know, it reduces that fragmented liquidity that's out there. And they're looking to avoid that. Okay. OTC markets, that is, you know, their fragmented liquidity becomes even weaker and weaker and weaker. Just how the system works. Okay. And I think that it's going to be interesting. I think that I believe that how the OTC markets could combat this is by them tokenizing, by them, you know, and embracing blockchain, by them doing this and raising their standards, because all in all, they have things in motion. Problem is, once they go and they go blockchain, it eliminates the need for a transfer agent, eliminates the need for a lot of things. Okay, and maybe they can go and integrate blockchain and interact with the NASDAQ and have things like that. And again, you know, this is just my view on it. You know, I think that there is a place for the OTC markets. I believe that if they do not evolve into what the future of finance is, that they're going to be left behind. All right, because, you know, when you're talking about pink sheet companies, that is the bottom of the barrel. You're scraping it, and you're scraping all the stuff out of that, you know. you don't want to be in that space, and they can actually up their game and eliminate that the pink sheet market in general and stick with higher quality companies, and they can thrive if they go the blockchain route. They can really thrive. And I hope that they do that, because they've been at it for a while, and they have a utility in the marketplace. And I think that if they do this and continue to work with the NASDAQ, that they can be that junior tier, as opposed to the NASDAQ doing it. But they have to raise their standards. And getting rid of the pinks, going, yeah, integrating blockchain, doing this stuff is going to do it. But what's going to happen, you're going to have a lot of transfer agents that are going to go fall by the wayside, and they're going to have to find other things to do. You're going to have a lot of things going on. Now, the transfer agents that go in and they create the platform that they can go and integrate and be prepared for certain things, you know, they're going to have to evolve too, because how that's going to work out, I can't say. Well, I can say, but I'm not going to say. But I believe that the innovation that's happening now and over the course of this year is going to change the dynamics of every transfer agent that is dealing with NASDAQ companies, for sure. Every transfer agent that's dealing with New York Stock Exchange companies, because you're going to bet your bottom dollar, New York Stock Exchange companies are going to be, I mean, the New York Stock Exchange itself is going to wind up going on chain as well with equities. Okay, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And I think this year is the pivotal year with the administration in place and what Paul Atkins with the SEC, what he has put in play, you know, it's game on. And we're going to see a lot of stuff going on. But I want to play the audio of Matt Savarese. He's the head of digital assets at NASDAQ. And his input on this is really important. So take a listen and just take a listen to what he has to say.
We filed a rule filing with the SEC that really allows our investors and members choice around how to settle and hold those assets and represent them. So either you can represent them in tokenized form now on blockchain, or you can hold them in its traditional form under the traditional accounts. Really, what the whole purpose of this is to bridge the digital asset world and the traditional world together, to do it, and some of our responsibility is to really do it with an investor first principles type of mode. So we really looked at this as a way to kind of give investors that level of choice and to drive things forward. It's crucial here that we're not creating a new exotic instrument. The stock is the stock, and that's what's really important, is that we focus to make sure that the investor is first and they have full rights and title that others, that the shareholder should have as part of owning that share. And what that really means is that when you start to trade that, that is the same ticker, it's the same CUSIP that's being traded, it's fully fungible between the token and its traditional form. It's just allowing the investor that choice on the back end to be able to hold it as new applications come forward and you have the enhanced utility of that instrument. So really, we're thinking about the investor and making sure that they have right title to the asset, which is contrary to some issues that have happened. And you want to make sure that there are that same level of investor protection that exists relative to something that may be a slightly different derivative that doesn't necessarily have the exact right type of that. So the nice thing is when we're talking about from a trade perspective, there's not much that happens day one from just the pure trade aspect of it. And that's deliberate. What we want to do is really bring the ecosystem along. So first and foremost is being able to interact with those shares in the tokenized form. The trade happens through the order book under the same SEC rules that apply in the national market system. That was important because the rules that have existed for decades, and we don't want to just completely rip out and upend the entire process. So it was very important for us to make sure that we operate within the national market system, but allow to start to see the benefits of having a token and utilize those, whether that be on the post-trade processing, which this is. It allows the post-trade processing to exist in its tokenized form. And also, as new applications come on, to be able to utilize that token in those applications, whether that be in borrowing, lending, collateral, other use cases. We see those as being really the new and forward thinking of what a token can actually be used for. Within the trade and the match itself, it's still the same order book and the same investor protections that you exist and the same best execution that you would receive with the depth of liquidity. I think it's important to really identify that we're looking at keeping the same level of liquidity and that depth of liquidity that exists today. The United States is the envy of the world when it comes to really thinking about what liquidity is. And what we don't want to see happen is the fragmenting of liquidity across various different pools. You would see in stress time that those pools get very thin, and then you have more potential for disruption in the market. So our goal is to really keep that full depth of liquidity and be able to utilize the asset in more forms than it is today.
And there you have it. Okay, you heard it from the man himself. Anyway, you know, what's going to be happening in the digital asset space is going to be an evolution, and I'm excited about it. It's going to change how markets are working today. You know, JP Morgan's in it, all the banks are in it, all the brokerage firms are going to be in it. BlackRock has been in it from the beginning, but from long enough for them to have a serious impact on what is going to transpire. Okay, anyway, this is the end of the show for today. I want to thank you for tuning into Money Never Sleeps Radio. We'll be back with you with another episode. And until then, I want you guys to have a fantastic and profitable trading day. Take care.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio. In your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Velazquez and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.